By the time I understood what she'd done, it didn't even feel like betrayal. That was the worst part. Betrayal implies surprise. This wasn't that. This felt organized. I'm sitting alone in my car outside the building. Engine off. Hands still on the steering wheel, like I'm waiting for someone to tell me it's okay to move. The air inside smells like old heat and panic sweat. My phone is face down on the passenger seat, because I already know what's on it. I don't need to see it again. Every choice I thought I made, every look, every risk, every time I leaned in instead of pulling back, was already accounted for. Pre-approved, framed, timed, saved. I keep replaying her voice in my head, soft but certain. The way she'd tilt her head and say, "You sure you want that?" Like she was giving me space. Like she wasn't already holding the answer. I thought I was leading. I thought I was taking what she was offering, because she wanted me to. I thought that made me powerful. Jesus Christ, I thought it made me a man. Now I understand the trick. If you let someone feel like the idea is theirs, they'll defend it harder than if you force them. They'll justify it. They'll fuck themselves for you. I did all that willingly, smiling, proud. And now there's a record of it. It started the way things always do, when you're already a little too sure of yourself. I was doing well, not struggling, not desperate. I had a decent title, my own place, a car that didn't embarrass me, and enough respect at work that people listened when I spoke. In Kingston, that counts for something. You walk a little straighter when you know people are watching. Then she arrived. Not loud. Not flashy. Just composed. The kind of woman who doesn't rush because she doesn't have to. Late 30s, always dressed like she knew where she was going next. She didn't flirt the way younger women do. No giggling. No obvious signals. She looked at you like she was assessing value. The first time she complimented me, it was professional. "You handle pressure well," she said. Eyes steady. No smile. That hit harder than anything sexual could have. Men like me, we're trained to read that as respect. The sexual tension didn't come from touching. It came from implication. From proximity. From the way she'd lower her voice when it was just us. Like she was letting me into a private frequency. Sometimes, she'd stand just close enough that I could smell her perfume. Clean, expensive, deliberate. She never brushed against me. That would have been obvious. Instead, she'd say things like, "You seem like a man who knows what he wants." And I'd feel my chest lift, my spine straighten. Ego inflation is quiet like that. It doesn't shout. It whispers exactly what you already believe. The first boundary she tested wasn't sexual. It was time. She'd ask me to stay late. Not because she needed help, but because she wanted company. "You don't mind, right?" she'd say. Always a question. Always optional. I always said yes. That's important. I chose it. That's what I kept telling myself. No one twisted my arm. No one forced my hand. She just made the alternative. Saying no, feel like weakness. One night, after most of the floor had cleared out, she leaned back in her chair and said, "You know, some men get uncomfortable when a woman's in charge." I laughed. Too fast. Not me. She smiled then. Just a little. Like she'd been waiting. From there, the sexual bargaining slid in without announcing itself. Not "do this and I'll do that," but "I trust you because you're strong. I feel safe because you're confident. I like when you take initiative." She framed desire as reward for leadership. If I made a call she liked, she'd linger longer when we talked. If I backed her in a meeting, she'd text me later. Nothing explicit, just enough to let me know she noticed. My phone would buzz and I feel that stupid electric rush in my gut. Validation dressed up as intimacy. One evening, she said, "I like how you don't ask permission." That line fucked me up. because suddenly not asking felt like the right thing to do. It felt masculine. It felt earned. The first time we crossed a line, it was small. A door closed longer than necessary. A conversation that drifted personal. She asked about my past relationships. I answered honestly, like an idiot, because honesty felt like dominance in that moment. Like I wasn't hiding. She listened carefully, filed things away. When she finally touched me, just her fingers on my wrist as she emphasized a point, I felt chosen, elevated, like I'd passed some invisible test. I told myself I was in control. I told myself she liked me because I was decisive, because I didn't hesitate, because I wasn't afraid of a little risk. What I didn't see was how carefully she only rewarded the behaviors she wanted repeated. Desire wasn't spontaneous. It was conditional. And I was too busy enjoying the fantasy to ask what the conditions were. By the time it became explicitly sexual, it already felt inevitable. That's the genius of it. When something's framed as the natural outcome of your own choices, you stop interrogating it. She never said, "If you do this, I'll sleep with you." That would have insulted me. Instead, she said things like, "I need someone I can trust," or "I hate feeling exposed." Trust became currency. Loyalty became arousal. The first night we actually crossed that line, it wasn't dramatic. No candles, no confessions. Just a quiet understanding that we were already there. She let me believe I was taking the lead, that I was the one escalating. Afterwards, lying there, skin still warm, she rested her head on my chest and said, "I like that you don't get needy." That sentence locked something in me. Because suddenly, restraint felt like power. Silence felt like control. I started regulating myself around her, not out of fear, but pride. I didn't want to be the kind of man who ruined things by wanting too much. That's where the moral violation crept in. She began sharing things about work, conflicts, frustrations, people who didn't respect her authority. She never asked me to intervene directly. She didn't have to. She'd just sigh and say, "It's exhausting carrying all this alone." So I offered help, advice, strategic nudges, little things, information passed casually, opinions framed as observations. Each time I did something that benefited her position, she rewarded me with closeness. With sex that felt approving rather than passionate. With praise that sounded intimate but functioned like reinforcement. I told myself I was protecting her. I told myself it was mutual. Hell, I told myself I was the one leveraging her, that I had access, influence, proximity. That belief let me ignore the unease creeping in. One night, after I'd done something that definitely crossed a line, shared information I shouldn't have, she looked at me and said softly, "I knew I could rely on you." That should have scared me. Instead, it made me feel 10 feet tall. In Jamaica, masculinity is wrapped tight around usefulness and control. Being the man who handles things carries weight. I leaned into that, hard. I started justifying everything. Everyone does this. This is how power actually works. If I don't, someone else will. The profanity in my head got louder when doubt crept in. "Stop being a pussy. You're not some church boy. You wanted this." And she never contradicted me. She just watched, adjusted, documented. I didn't know that part yet. The documentation. I didn't know that every conversation, every message, every choice was being quietly preserved. I thought discretion was mutual. I thought wrong. The shift happened fast. That's another thing I didn't anticipate. I thought the fall would feel gradual, like the rise. It didn't. One afternoon, she asked me to come by her office. Door closed. Same setup as always. But the air felt different. Cooler. Heavier. She didn't touch me. That was new. Instead, she turned her monitor toward me. On the screen was a folder. Inside it, messages, logs, dates, context. Not just mine, hers too. Everything framed cleanly, professionally, like evidence. She said calmly, "I need you to understand how this looks." My stomach dropped. Hard. That's when the humiliation kicked in. Not because she'd trapped me, but because I finally saw the shape of it. Every initiative I'd taken was already there, timestamped. Every risk I thought I chose was part of a pattern she could explain better than I could. She wasn't angry. She wasn't emotional. She was prepared. "You were always free to say no," she said. "And you didn't." That line destroyed me. Because it was true. And because she knew exactly how to use it. She laid out the consequences without raising her voice. Not as threats, as realities. Reputation, career, relationships, the way stories travel in a place like this. The way men like me don't get the benefit of ambiguity when the narrative hardens. I tried to speak. Tried to assert something. Control, innocence, misunderstanding. But my words sounded small, defensive, weak. She watched me struggle, then said, "I really did like you, but you needed to believe you were in charge." That was the fracture. The exact moment something inside me cracked open. I realized then that the power I felt had always been temporary, conditional, on loan, and the interest was about to come due. When I left her office, I didn't feel angry. I felt exposed, stripped of the story I'd been telling myself. The story where I was decisive, dominant, desired. Now I was just documented. I still hear her voice sometimes when I replay it all. Calm, precise. "It was your idea." And the sick part? Part of me still wants to argue that it was. That I chose. That I wasn't manipulated. Because if I admit the truth, that my ego made me easy, then I have to live with what that says about me. And that's a file I can't delete.